Cool. All right, good to go. This is a massive turnout, so thank you for coming to my session. I wasn't expecting that many people, but hopefully I can keep you awake for the second to last session during TechEd. Everybody enjoyed their TechEd this year? Quite useful? Great. Awesome. Hopefully I can add just a little bit more to your TechEd experience today. You might be wondering, who's this guy? I've never presented a TechEd before, but this is my second presentation, this TechEd. For those who haven't attended my first one, my name is Hussein Albadri. I manage the mobile team at Datacom. It's really interesting because I was a developer and an architect on the Microsoft platform for such a long time, but I never actually got to present a TechEd until I became a manager, which is quite ironic. For those who don't know Datacom, we are the biggest IT company in New Zealand. So essentially we do a lot of stuff, everything to do with IT, from networking to infrastructure to software. And so the story that I'm about to tell you today actually brings together two parts of our business, the software part, which I'm part of, and the networking part as well. A little bit more about me. I'm outside of work. I'm starting a clothing brand. It's a niche clothing brand. It's very hard because I don't know much about fashion, which doesn't actually help. But it's a niche clothing brand for Arabs living outside the Middle East. If you haven't picked up from my name yet, I am an Arab, and I live outside the Middle East, so at least I know that much. I do make a pretty good coffee, and that is a picture of my latte art over there, so if you get an invite over to my house, I would advise you not to say no. And I also advise you to try my Nutella Mochaccino, which is, it's fantastic. You only get it at my place. Today, I'm going to take you through my presentation in a little bit of a story style, because there is a bit of a story behind the presentation. The story started around this time last year, and it started with some conversation that we're having with a couple of our customers, and the conversations were around two different problem domains. But they actually had quite a common technology domain or technology solution for them. The first conversation we're having was about activity-based working. Does anybody here in the room know what activity-based working is? Hands up. Okay, there's a few people. And out of those people, who actually works in an activity-based working environment? Okay. All right, not many people. So for those who don't know, activity-based working is a way of structuring modern corporate offices to encourage better collaboration and better communication within that office. And so you have concepts like hot desks, where people don't have an allocated desk. They have a locker. They come in the morning. They take their stuff, take it out of their locker, put it on a desk, and the next day they rotate and so on and so forth. The point of it is that rather than sitting in your department silos, you actually get to work in a cross-functional way based on the activity that you're doing. So if you come in one morning and you're working on something, you go and co-locate with the people you're working, that you're doing the work with, and then the next day you could be doing something else and so on and so forth. So you can imagine an environment where people can actually work in a variety of locations. And if you put that in a large office environment, then it becomes a bit challenging because people are relocating all the time. The other thing about activity-based working environment is that it encourages people to communicate, and so it has a lot of breakout areas and meeting rooms where people can just get up straight away, go to a meeting room and have a conversation, or go to a small breakout area and have a conversation. So there's really a heck of a lot of breakout areas in these types of environments. This picture here is a picture of ASB Bank's North Wharf building. And this is actually taken from their Street View. If you go on Google Street View, you can have a look inside the building. It's a magnificent building. I've been in it before. But what you'll notice here is there's a bunch of empty desks because they've probably taken that photo after hours, but nobody has an allocated desk, so all the desks look the same. You've got this concept of coloring, which is actually not a branding thing. So you've got an orange thing happening here and a green thing and a purple happening there. This is not just branding. This is actually a way of structuring some of the floors. So it's a way of going, in activity-based working, you have neighborhoods, and so each neighborhood has a color, so you're in the green area or you're in the orange area. So it's just another way to help people find their way around a bit more. You'll see over here there's a breakout area, so it's all, you know, there's a lot of open-style breakout areas where you could just huddle around with a few people and have a meeting. So some of the conversations that we're having were around the experience that workers get in an activity-based environment. And some of the questions that were being asked were things like, what if I could find my colleagues who sit in a new spot every now and again? So like I said, people can be sitting in new places all the time. So how can you find your colleagues who keep rotating like that? What if I could find my colleagues when they're constantly on the move within the office? And this is especially hard with activity-based working because the availability of meeting spaces makes it so much easier for people to just get up and walk around and have conversations that it's actually hard to find people sitting at their desk. What if I could find areas where I could hold a meeting? So that's another kind of concept where because we've got so many meeting areas, how do I find these areas and how do I get to them? And then how do I see where I am and how could I get to a colleague or a meeting area within the office? So this is about directing me as an employee or someone who's in that building to the areas or to the people that I'm trying to find. So these are some of the problem areas that we were facing with that particular client. The other conversation that we were having was with a large indoor retailer. And so this retailer is a multi-tenanted area, so it had quite a few retail shops within a closed indoor area. If you've ever been to Britomart, for example, you'd see something like that, where you have a lot of shops. Sometimes you'll have multiple floors. Obviously, if you're in a mall environment, you'll have multiple floors. So how do you guide people, and how do you enable them to find things? And that was the question, really, that our customers were asking, is what if I could, as a customer, so as average Joe, me and you, easily find the places that I'm after inside a large indoor retail area? Because if you've ever gone into a mall and you've stood in front of a map, it takes you a bit of time to actually kind of calibrate where you are and where you need to be and where all the different places are and what direction is what. So that's the kind of problem statement that we were facing. And then how could I enhance that customer experience by being able to receive offers for something that I'm actually looking for as I pass by a shop that has those offers on? So this isn't about spamming people with marketing material. This is actually about targeted marketing material. If I'm after a TV and I'm walking in the mall and I walk past the Noel Leeming and the Noel Leeming has an offer on some of the cool TVs that I'm looking for and it pushes out that offer to my mobile, that's actually adding value to my life. That's actually telling me and prompting me that I should go inside and have a look at it. So that's the kind of scenario that we're talking about. And then what if, as a customer, I could receive VIP treatment at the shops that I frequently visit when they know that I'm around? So if the shops get notified as soon as I enter the premises and they welcome me into their shop and they have somebody ready to serve me, that's actually a huge value-add experience. So these are the kind of questions that were being asked in that kind of scenario. And so we had these conversations, and we went back, and we did a bit of research, had a bit of thinking, and around that time, a guy called Dane turned up. Now, Dane is a business development manager in our networking team. This is Dane, the tall guy, not the short guy. Dane has been also kind of thinking about how do we add more value to the networking aspect of things. So he's got a team of engineers. They go out, they install Wi-Fi for people, and they install networks for people. And he's thinking about how do I add a level of value to that. And so the clear thing that we got out of the conversations between Dane and I was that location awareness, the best kind of technology that was available for it is GPS. But GPS is pretty rubbish indoors. So once you get indoors, you're really up to triangulation to try and find where somebody is. And triangulation is really hit and miss in terms of accuracy. So one of the technologies that that they were toying with was Wi-Fi geolocation. So Wi-Fi is an invasive technology. It's a technology that you've all got on your phones, and you probably have it turned on all the time because you don't want to have to be turning it on and off and remembering to do that and not leveraging your data connectivity at home or at work. So Wi-Fi is invasive. It's available. Everybody's got Wi-Fi. If you go to your local coffee shop these days, they've got Wi-Fi. All the corporate environments, all the large retail environments, everybody's got Wi-Fi within those environments. And Wi-Fi is actually location aware. So Wi-Fi can be quite smart if it's laid out correctly to work out the location of the devices that are connected to it or the devices that are just roaming around, not necessarily connected to it. And so Dane and I had a vision at that point. And the vision was to use Wi-Fi indoor positioning data in productive ways. So to use it to satisfy the couple of scenarios that I talked about a little bit earlier. And the vision had to be realized within a mobile device because that's the way that people are interacting when they're on the go. So it had to be mobile. So then we started having to think about how it works. And Dane was talking to Cisco at the time. So Cisco is, you know, everybody knows Cisco. Their Wi-Fi technology had these smarts in it. And how it works is basically like this. You've got your base devices. So these are, you know, your phones, your laptops, your RFID tags even, any kind of connected device to the Wi-Fi. These devices connect up to the wireless access points, which is basic. So you could have multiple wireless access points, obviously, in a very large complex or indoor complex. And then you've got a LAN controller that kind of corrals all these access points from a networking perspective. Cisco have an engine called MSC, the Mobility Services Engine. I always get that one wrong. The Mobility Services Engine. And the MSC is really the hero of our topic here today because MSC gathers all the data out of the access points and has the smarts to leverage it to do location awareness, Wi-Fi location awareness. And I'll tell you a little bit about how that works in a second. So MSC and the LAN controller both interact with this common portal, used to be called NCS, now called Prime, Cisco Prime. And that portal lets you configure all sorts of aspects of your Wi-Fi network, but it also lets you look at a map view of your network and be able to configure maps and different floors and all that kind of cool location awareness that you want to have indoors. Now, the magic part about MSC is that it has an API. And the API allows third-party apps to connect to MSC and to do a whole lot of cool things with MSC. And so what we did is Dane kind of grabbed me, and he wanted to show me how MSC actually works. And I think that's quite fascinating. So MSC, if you think about a floor map, so this is my local mall. This is Lynn Mall. If you take that floor map, this is the ground floor on Lynn Mall, you can take that floor map and you can load it into Cisco MSC. If you think about that floor map, you might position some Wi-Fi access points all over the place just to make sure that you're getting the right amount of coverage. And you're going to have to get your network architect to actually design your Wi-Fi network for location awareness because it's a bit different to data connectivity. There's different strategies for positioning those Wi-Fi access points, especially around corners of the building. And then what happens is you do a little calibration exercise, which does kind of look a bit like that when you're in the office. So you have to do all these strange exercises of trying to calibrate where you are on the map with the Cisco MSC engine so that it can understand kind of the relative positioning of where you are to the map that it has indoors. So really, you want to do this after hours, otherwise you're going to look like this guy in the office. Now, Cisco MSC, once you've done that calibration, it offers you the ability to define coverage areas or zones on the map. So you can go in, and if you've ever used a GIS tool, you'll go in and you can define, draw all these areas on the map, and you can say, these are all zones that I want to use or I want to define on that map. And then what you can do using the API is you can define triggers on those zones. So you could say, when I enter that zone or when I leave that zone, I want an event to be triggered off through the API, and I can have third-party apps listening for that event. So instantly, you're starting to get that level of value of geo-fencing and geo-notifications, geographically aware notifications happening. MSC also has a platform called CMX with it, and CMX, I can't actually remember what it stands for, customer mobility experience, I think. It's basically a platform for analytics. So what it does is that it pulls all that data, that location-aware data from the MSC engine, and then it presents a whole lot of reports that are there and available out of the box. So this was some really cool stuff. So this is all available once you put your Cisco network in place. And what I'm going to do now is I'm actually going to jump into the Prime portal and the CMX portal and show you what those things actually look like. So let's see how we're going. So what we've got set up in our Datacom Wellesley Street office, which is just, you know, 5 minutes away from here, is we've got a test lab Wi-Fi environment set up, obviously to separate that from our company Wi-Fi. And if I switch over, and so what I'm doing is I'm just going to be logging into Prime on that network. One thing you'll have to know about MSC is that it's a very resource-intensive piece of software, and I'm really not sure why, but it requires something like 8 cores and I think 24 or 32 gigs of RAM to be available. So it is quite resource-intensive, and we've set it up in a test lab, which means it's actually quite takes a bit of time for it to load. And I did log in when I started, but it's obviously timed me out, so we'll just wait for that to load. Yeah, so we've got that test lab laid out, and we've got a whole bunch of access points that are separate to our core Wi-Fi infrastructure, and we've set them up within that office to be in optimal places so that we get some good Wi-Fi accuracy, and it's actually down to about 3 to 5 meters at the moment within the office, so it's not too bad. Once it loads up, I was told this Wi-Fi, there's a special speaker Wi-Fi, which is meant to be faster than the rest of the other Wi-Fi. Come on. Okay. So I'm going to go straight into the page where it shows you the map view of the floor. You can get to it. I'm not going to click through it now, but you can get to it through the monitor tab, looking through the site maps over here. You'll find a whole bunch of maps for the different floors that you have, and then you can click in and do all sorts of stuff with the map, which I'm going to show you in a second, hopefully, once it decides to load up. Here we go. Come on. So where's the risk with live demos, eh? I've got a set of screenshots as a backup, but hopefully this will actually load. Okay, here we go. So you've got a map view over here. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to turn off all the things that are overlaid on the map just so you can see the map. So the map by default is a floor map. This is what the floor looks like in the Wellesley Street office. It's actually to scale. So if you see up here, you've got 30-odd meters. So it's a to scale map. And we've done all the measurements and the calibration already. And then what I can do is I can overlay some stuff on top of it. So let's have a look at just the access points that we have on that map once it decides to reload. Here we go. So it's showing up with the different access points that we've set up for our lab environment. So you can see those access points hopefully over here. And then what I'll do is I'll overlay the clients. So we haven't set it up to pick up all the clients. We've put a bit of a limit just because we don't want it to go any slower than this. But what you'll see here is that there are actually connected clients. So there are clients that are on the network. We've connected them to the network, but there's also disconnected clients. So the thing about this is that once you've got Wi-Fi turned on your phone and you walk inside of the coverage area for this network, the MAC address, the device already sends the MAC address to those networks. So that's something that happens, you know, whether we like it or not. That's the invasiveness of Wi-Fi. So the MAC address gets sent to those networks, but the MAC address can be pretty random, so you don't actually know any other details aside from that identifier. But what you can see here is you can see the connected devices and the disconnected devices as well. What we've also done here is we've defined these coverage areas, and the coverage areas, which you'll see in blue, they're highlighted in blue, are all things that are going to become quite relevant when I do the second part of my demo. But what they do is they help us define things like where the different rooms are. So we've got a lunchroom, we've got the boardroom, we've got a lot of different offices, all defined as different coverage areas on that map. So hopefully that makes sense. In the CMX side, you've actually got a analytics platform that gives you all sorts of data about it. Now, unfortunately, we actually had a pretty catastrophic crash earlier this week, just before ticket, which is good timing, which means that the data that we have isn't as historic. So you can see that the device count here starts from, it was last week actually, so it starts from the 2nd of September. But what I've done is I've actually got a bunch of screenshots that I can show you of the different reports that you might get out of the box with Cisco MSE. So if I jump back to my slides, I click on this plan B. Okay, cool. So what we can see here are reports like dwell time. So in what areas of my office or my store or whatever it might be, are customers spending most of their time or users spending most of their time? So you can actually report on how long people spend in different areas, which is quite handy if you're trying to optimize for traffic routing or things like that. If you think about an airport scenario, for example, where you're trying to make sure that you're not getting big congestions in certain places. Or also, if you're trying to highlight something from a marketing perspective or a messaging perspective, you know at least where people are concentrated. So that's dwell time, and it shows it to you in those little cylinders up there. You'll see that one has got quite a heavy dwell time because that's actually the office area. That's where all the desks are, so people do dwell over there a lot. Worryingly enough, there's a yellow cylinder over here, which is the lunchroom, so people do spend a lot of time in the lunchroom as well, but we haven't reported on the bathrooms, which is quite good. So you can see that in different views. You can see that in the map view, or you can see it in kind of your charts as well. You can see things like how many of my customers are new visitors versus returning visitors. So you can kind of work out the difference between new and returning based on their MAC addresses. This is going to become increasingly difficult for iOS because iOS 8 actually randomizes MAC addresses. So it'll be quite interesting to see how the anonymous aspect of this will work with iOS 8. Then you can look at what are the most common paths that people take throughout the area. So you can look at people going to the bathroom a lot. And to the lunchroom a lot and taking different paths. But what it does is that it highlights to you the different paths, that the most common paths that people actually take within that defined zone. So that's all quite handy knowledge. What are the most crowded areas of my store at given times of the day? So this is around device count rather than dwell time. So whereas before we were looking at how long do people spend in that area, now we're looking at how many devices are getting crowded up in a certain area. Where are my customers most likely to go immediately after visiting blah? So you can see immediately after going to this area, they're likely to go to another area. And again, worryingly, the toilets show up pretty high over there. How long do my customers spend in certain areas of my store during different times of the day? So that's again about slicing and dicing that data according to the different time periods of the day. So this is all really cool stuff that you could do with MSE right out of the box. So when Dane showed me this stuff, I got pretty excited. But the problem was I didn't actually have any time to do anything about it at that stage. And an opportunity came up. Microsoft ran a little program called the Microsoft Student Accelerator Program, which they're running again this year, and you might have seen a few students walking around with these purple T-shirts. And what we did is we got a couple of students to come in, and they helped us out with doing a little bit of a prototype of the experiences that we're talking about. And so these are the guys, Sid and Saketh. They're the guys in the shirts. Mohit Singh is one of the guys in our team. He was helping them out throughout the whole process as well. And the first thing that the guys looked into was the API. So we dug straight into the API, and we had a look at what are the relevant calls that we can use within the Cisco MSC API. And the API, the latest version is a RESTful API. These aren't method names or anything, but these are the types of things that you can do with the API. So you can get all clients that the MSC can see. You can get all locations, and that's quite important because the locations are the zones that I talked about earlier. And so what we can do with that information is that we can fetch a whole bunch of polygons with the coordinates all defined, and we can reproduce them on a map of our own on a third-party application. So it gets all locations, get client location by MAC address. So that helps us actually get somebody's location if we know their MAC address. Get MAC address by IP address. This one is very important because, first of all, there's no way for third-party apps, not on iOS or Windows Phone anyway, to get the MAC address of the device. So the operating systems don't allow that. But if you're connected to the network and you've got an IP address, then you can get the MAC address of that device by calling Cisco MSC, handing over the IP address, which you have access to. The other important part about this is I hinted about iOS 8 and the MAC address randomization. This is quite good because once you're actually connected to the Wi-Fi network, your MAC address doesn't change. And so this is a good way to get around that as well and get consistent tracking of a user's IP address. And then we've got get and set notifications. And the notifications are essentially the triggers that I mentioned earlier that occur once you enter or exit out of a location. So notifications can be around movement. So you can define movement triggers, which say, when I move beyond X meters, notify or send out an event. Or I could define containment triggers, which says in or out of a defined zone. So if I enter a zone or if I exit a zone, then that will trigger an event, and I can listen for that. The basic architecture of the app that we set out to produce for the prototype is like this. So if you remember from my other diagram, we had MSC connecting to third-party apps. That was the API. So that's kind of the important piece out of that architecture that we had a look at. The architecture the high-level architecture of our setup was like this. So we had the device talking to Azure Mobile Services, and then Azure Mobile Services talking to Cisco MSC. And so Mobile Services became our little middleware layer, and we used that for a couple of reasons, which I'll mention in a sec. And then the devices connect through the Wi-Fi into Cisco MSC, and so the devices are already connected to MSC through their access points, and we're connected to MSC through Azure Mobile Services. The reason we use Azure Mobile Services as a middleware layer was, A, to make us Wi-Fi platform independent on that particular prototype. So we didn't want to be locked down to Cisco necessarily, so we could rip that out and replace it with another Wi-Fi engine. And two was mobile services, the mobile services aspect of Azure, which let us store some data and send out notifications to the devices. And that's the two basic things that we wanted to do in the prototype, which was to have a user who's a customer or an employee of an organization log in, and we want to be able to store kind of their device so that we can send out notifications to them and tailor the experience for them. Now, the user experience on the device, which was a Windows Phone device, we had a few thoughts about that. So we looked at what can we do on a Windows Phone device, because it is quite flexible, and there's a lot of cool things that devs can do on it. We looked at the Maps SDKs. So there's different Maps SDKs that we could tap into. They're 2D maps, so you got Google Maps, so you got Here Maps from Nokia or Bing Maps. You got push notifications and live tiles that you could hook into, or you could hook into the voice interface, so you can do some pretty cool stuff around asking your phone where somebody is or where a room is, and it would kind of guide you through in that way. But we decided that 2D maps were simply not good enough. 2D was so last year. So what we decided to do was use 3D maps. And there are three core premises why we actually, you know, that were the basis of the decision to go with 3D, even though it had a bit more complexity. Other than the fact that it looks really cool, 3D gives you a more realistic environment that's easier to understand. So when I talked earlier about standing in a mall and trying to kind of navigate your way around this still 2D map and finding your direction, if you think about a large office environment or even the large retail environment, if you are looking at a 3D map that has a whole bunch of objects that are related to the environments you're seeing in front of you, it suddenly becomes a lot easier for you to navigate that environment than having to look for aisles or roads or any kind of, you know, common paths that will give you a point of relevance to the map. Unity 3D is a gaming engine, and it had plenty of pre-made objects that we could use, which meant that if we're prototyping something for an office, we can drag desks and chairs and all sorts of stuff into the map and replicate that office experience. A 3D map also has physical awareness, which means it becomes a lot easier to do routing. Routing is quite a hard thing to do, especially on a 2D map. In a 3D map, especially using Unity 3D, you can actually use a grab a framework, and we use the A*STAR pathway library to do routing, and it's made easier by the fact that it's got physical awareness. So if you're drawing walls and doors and objects on a 2D map, it'll tell you to just kind of jump over the desk or whatever. On a 3D map, it can actually recognize that this is something that's sticking out of the ground, and you need to go around this object. So it was much easier to do routing. And Unity 3D was a cross-platform product, so we could actually take the 3D map that we produce in Unity, and we could chuck it on a different platform, ideally. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to demo the prototype that we built, that the guys built. And before I start the demo, I have a few clauses. Like I said, the lab environment is all set up at Datacom in the Wellesley Street office. I've got two devices connected for the demo. And even though you saw all those different devices that were floating around, we've selected two different devices. We have a Surface RT and a Windows Phone Nokia Lumia 620. And what we've done is I've got a device over here that I'm going to be showing you, but I've hard-coded the MAC address of one of the devices down in the building to be this device. The device polling can take a bit of time, so movements can take a bit of time to update, and you'll notice that very clearly on the map. And I will need a hand for this demo to happen. I need somebody down at the Wellesley Street office to actually move the devices around so you guys can see them over here, because I can't use the Wi-Fi infrastructure here. To do this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to use Link, and I'm going to link Dane, who's sitting in the office waiting for me to contact him. So if I switch back to my demo environment, what I'll do is I'll start the project my phone. So it is a Windows Phone experience. Allow screen projection, yes. Okay. You guys can see that, all right? Cool. So I've got a little app over here called Datacom IPS, which I'll tap into. And what you'll see is a login screen. So we've got a couple of interesting things here. We've got a button for social and a button for retail, and that's really to mimic the two scenarios that I talked about earlier. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump into the social login. Hopefully the Wi-Fi is going on the phone. Yep. Okay. So there's a couple of things that you can see when we log in from the the social collaboration perspective. So that's the activity-based working concept. We've got an area view, and we've got a people view. And so the area view helps you find areas around the building. Now, the device that's hardwired to me is actually sitting at around the reception area. So what I'm going to do is, if I tap on the lunchroom, it's going to start up the map. Now, Unity takes a bit of time to start up the first time you load the app. So we'll just wait for it to load all the assets and all the things, but the map should be a bit quicker after that. Come on, Unity. So what you're going to see is you're going to see a 3D view of the office, and you're going to see the two devices that are on, the device that's there that's replicating me, and you'll see the area that is defined as the lunchroom on Cisco MSE, and we've got a bit of a routing path that's going to it. So this is best viewed kind of this way, that way, that way. Okay. So if I do a little bit of a zoom, my shaky fingers, and I can do a pan, then you'll see that I'm kind of at the reception area. So this is kind of the reception desk we've got over here. You can see the white little path over here that's taking me to the lunchroom. And we've got a little marker here to indicate the lunchroom. Now you'll see we were able to use all sorts of furniture, which actually mimics the area that we have in our Wesley Street office, if you've ever been there. So what I'll do from here is I'll go back. And if I go to the People tab, what I'll see is if I tap into Dane, what we've done is we've pulled a little profile for people. So if you think about activity-based working, it's in a corporate environment. You might pull some of that data out of AD, but this isn't integrated. What I can do is I can set up notifications, which is the triggers that I talked about. I'll show you that in a second. But if I go straight into the map view, it'll show me that Dane is actually, he just happens to be inside the lunchroom. So Dane is in the lunchroom at the moment, and I am in the reception area. The other device is in the reception area. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to jump on Link, and I'm going to ask Dane to move into this area of the office. So hopefully Dane's online. You're live at TechEd. Uh-oh. Come on, Link. Don't fail me. Please move towards your desk. Oh, there we go. Cool. He's alive. You're here. No, you're not. You're in the lunchroom. Oh, okay. Don't play with me, man. So it does take a bit of time to update. And the reason for that is because the devices by default, they send their updated MAC address and they do a poll out to the network in a time that's really dependent on the device. So some of the devices take around 30 seconds to poll again, and so the network doesn't actually get an updated location until 30 seconds later. We have got a set of equipment that's just come in, which does, you can see moving. Oh, I should really show that over here. You can see moving towards the office. So the new equipment, some of the new access points, what they can do is they can override that time that it takes to poll on the device. And so that's pretty cool, because then you can say every 5 or 10 seconds, give me a signal or give me a poll so that I can get more rapid updates. So Dane's desk is over there, so he's clearly moved to his desk. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to ask Dane, whoops, escape out of this program. Okay. Before I do that, actually, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go back and I'm going to set up a notification. So this is all around triggers. I'm going to say if Dane is going to enter an area within the building, then I want to be notified. So if I go back, you guys can see that. Yep. And I go to the notifications view, I can say I'll set up an alert, and the condition is when Dane enters. So I can do enters, exits, or moves away. And these are the different triggers that we talked about. When Dane enters the boardroom, I want to be notified. And so what I can do is we've defined a time limit for those notifications. So I can say after 15 minutes, I'm going to expire that notification. And I will save. There we go. Set containment trigger for Dane Blackmore. Notification saved. So now, when Dane is going to enter the boardroom, is going to give me a push notification. So I'll exit out of the app so you can see that we've got an in-app push notification, but we've also got an out-of-app. So can you please go to the boardroom? I've set up a notification. Your thing on the way now. Cool. Okay, so it will take a bit of time for that polling to happen and for the update to come through. So what I'll do is I'll just maximize that. Now, what we've also done on the device is we've taken that social collaboration type experience and we've replicated it in a retail scenario. And we use exactly the same office because we can't get away from the office environment. But what we've done is we've leveraged the same map and the same zones to mimic a retail environment, an indoor retail environment. So I'm going to show you that in a second, but hopefully Dean is going to give me some good news, or the device is going to give me some good news pretty soon. How's he going? Is he there? Oops. Just turn the volume up. Oh, something's come in. Dane has entered the boardroom. Yes! So if I tap on that, it's really hard to get this demo working, actually. Regardless of how easy I make it look. When I tap on that, what it's going to do is it's actually going to start up the map, and it should hopefully show me that Dane has now entered into the boardroom. There we go. So there's Dane in the boardroom right now. So he's... He's definitely moved in there, and if we can look down over here, we can see that we've mimicked the boardroom environment. We've got our Datacom IPS, yeah. We've got our whiteboard over there, and we've got our desks and everything, so that's pretty cool. Okay, so what I'll do now is I'll go back. I'll just say thanks to Dane. No, I've closed it. Oh, well. No worries. Let's go back and go back into IPS. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to log in as a different in a different mode. So I'm going to log in retail mode. If I press login here, what we've got in retail mode is two views. One is around deals, so current deals, and one is around shops that are available. And so the shops you could pretty much replace interchangeably with meeting rooms. So if I click on Nike, for example, you know, I'll see a bunch of information about a shop. And then if I go into the map, then the map should show me, Unity's going to start again because the app closed, but the map is going to show me where the Nike shop is, and we've defined that to actually be the lunchroom, and it's going to show me how to get there from my current location. So there we go. There it is, and it's got Nike on it. So we've defined different regions based on the different contexts that we're logging into. Now what I'm going to do is go back, and what we've done for retail is, like I said, what we'd want to do is not spam customers with deals, but we want to be able to set some preferences. So in here we've got some customer preferences around, you know, clothing, food, or whatever other deals, and what we do is we filter those deals by by the type of thing that you're after. So if you're after food and clothing, you're going to see some stuff from Peter Pitt and from Nike and Ted Baker. And if I removed food, then Peter Pit should ideally be gone, which it is. And the same thing happens with the push notifications. I'm not going to replicate that, but it's the same kind of scenario. Oh, yeah, sorry. Thank you. It's the same kind of scenario with the push notification. So I'll just show you that again. So if you go into my preferences, same kind of scenario with the push notifications. If you enter a certain area, we actually match up based on your preferences. And so what we do is, if you can imagine a retail scenario, somebody can log into a portal. They can say, this is a food-related offer. And you can get a bit more granular than that. And then you push out that kind of information depending on the customer's preferences that are defined on their device. So that's the level of value that you can add by leveraging this kind of technology. Cool. So I had a plan B. I had a video of the whole thing, but luckily we won't have to use that. So how do we improve? What you saw is a bit, it's a bit prototype. Well, it is very prototype-ish. It's a little bit clunky. It's a little bit slow. Like I said, the access points that enable up to 5-second updates are going to be really important because they're going to enable us to see that that information happen a lot more real time. But that's not necessarily important depending on the scenario that you want. So if it's just about someone entering a certain area, then that could be okay because they might take 30 seconds to go through that area and for that notification to happen or whatever the scenario is. What we also want to have is better accuracy. So at the moment, you're having about a 3 to 5 meter accuracy depending on how you lay out your access points. There is some new technology that's going to come out soon, which is going to enable better accuracy because it's going to have a lot more smarts around storing different client positions. So the technology will get smarter and it will get more accurate. And I've heard numbers being touted around the 1 meter or even less mark. So it's going to become extremely accurate. The other thing we could do to improve it is to have a hybrid type setup where you incorporate Bluetooth beacons. And I haven't talked about BLE beacons in this talk because Bluetooth is still not as invasive as Wi-Fi. I'm going to ask a question right now. How many people in the audience have Bluetooth turned on right now on their device? Okay, how many people have Wi-Fi turned on right now on their device? Okay, there you go. So Wi-Fi is a lot more invasive at the moment, and that's because Bluetooth, it's still going to pick up. The wearables are going to come. The Internet of Things is going to come, and you're going to start to turn on your Bluetooth a lot more frequently. Bluetooth is also very good for getting that really detailed accuracy. So if you're placing a Bluetooth beacon, you can get a lot closer range accuracy than you would with Wi-Fi at the moment. So it could be that you incorporate Bluetooth for those kind of scenarios where you want to get really close, but you use Wi-Fi for the kind of the overarching type scenarios if someone has entered this area within the building. The other thing that we could do to improve is to obviously leverage the Internet of Things and the connected devices. And that could be through the experience, for example. So if you think about Google Glass and somebody putting on Google Glass and being able to navigate their way around or see things happen on their glass screen as they're walking about. So a lot of that geographical and contextual awareness can be really leveraged when you've got these kind of devices around. There are a lot of real-world scenarios. So I talked about a couple of scenarios, and I demoed a couple of scenarios here. But if you think about it, there's asset tracking scenarios that you could use Wi-Fi for, and that could be in large indoor areas like hospitals, or it could be within educational campuses, where you can actually track, hospitals have a heck of a lot of expensive machinery, and some of it is mobile. So if you're able to track that, then that's actually quite handy. Airport passenger tracking, there's already solutions out there that are starting to leverage that for airport passenger tracking. And also experience enhancement for VIP customers. So we did talk a little bit about that, but that could actually be quite broad. So not only in retail scenarios, but any kind of scenario where you have a VIP customer and you want to tweak that experience for them, this could be a really good way to do that. So I really hope you got a lot out of the session today. What I really wanted to show you was the fact that existing Wi-Fi can go beyond its main usage. So a lot of people think about Wi-Fi as a data technology, but really you can get pretty accurate location tracking with what we have today. It has a lot of real-world applications, and I talked about and demoed a couple of them, but obviously there's a lot more that you could do with it. And with the development API, you can really go to town with this stuff. There are people using this stuff already. So airport passenger tracking, hospitals. I think there's a hospital actually in Australia that's using this stuff already. So this is already out in the market, and it's already becoming a real-world thing. And the technology will only improve from here on. It'll only get better. Thanks very much. I hope you enjoyed the session. If you want to have a look at the, if you want to ask any questions, obviously, before I move off that, you can hit me up on Twitter or you can come and ask me. I'll break out into questions in a sec. Hussein and Zed on Twitter. Resources, the Cisco MSE API for your reference, if anybody's got Cisco Wi-Fi within their office already, and the session's obviously going to be on Channel 9. Do complete your session evaluations so you can win some cool stuff. And I noticed that it's actually an instant feedback. So as soon as you rate somebody, it comes up to tell you if you won or not. And I haven't won anything yet. Thank you all very much. And we'll break into questions.